When the shootings in San Bernardino, California broke out, a small army of law enforcement turned out also. Local, state, federal, and even Homeland Security Department. Well, who's in charge and when do feds show up? For a review of the protocols, I spoke with Patrick Doyle. He's a former New Jersey state police official, now a law enforcement consultant with Unisys. He says regardless of whether a situation is a simple bank robbery or a terror outbreak,
the tip of the spear will always be local law enforcement. And that, even for listeners that live in a small town, their local police officers will always be the first to respond. And they will be there throughout the incident, no matter what it's deemed later on. So local law enforcement first responders best to know the area, they know the particulars, they often have the assets that are local, a SWAT team, etc. It doesn't mean that other federal resources won't be brought to bear somewhat later, but in the first 10 minutes, it's always going to be your local police officer that responds, and that happened in this case as well.
And what is the mechanism that says to the FBI, we better be there also?
Almost simultaneous to the incident occurring, a 911 call comes in, very close to immediately. Local law enforcement, the leadership, will let the FBI and Department of Homeland Security know. That's done through a database, but in a case like this, I really think that that was done via a phone call or an emergent face-to-face meeting. So very soon after, and this one is obvious, multiple shooting victims, a crime scene that sprees across a county, they're told immediately, and they have a quick discussion. What is it? What can we help you with? So FBI, DHS, very supportive at first. Not looking to take over, but looking to understand what the incident is. That conversation happens almost immediately, within the first 10 minutes.
And so what does the FBI tend to do when they say, well, this is something we need to be involved in? Do they send agents? What happens?
Always send agents. They will always send agents as the eyes and ears of the local FBI director or special agent in charge, but also to be supportive with some technical resources that they have that no one else has. So they'll bring those, regardless of whether it turns out to be general crime, a bank robbery, or just a workplace shooting, not to demean that, but they'll send help anyway, even if local law enforcement ultimately is the lead agency and the FBI never takes over, so to speak.
In San Bernardino, what do you think was the thought process? Because it seemed like the, I guess even you could see on television screens that the situation really was far from under control, like you might have in a bank robbery or something like, or even a workplace shooting, which is more contained.
Having been through these incidents, I suspect that most everyone, including the first police officers there, knew that this was probably related to terrorism or certainly had that idea was behind it. There might have been some radicalism to it. So I think almost immediately the FBI came with the idea that they might eventually be the lead agency. I don't think anyone thought that when there's 20 or 30 people that are shot that this is going to be just some general crime spree or an attempted robbery or something we might consider more mundane. So I think initially that was the idea. It took a while for that to play out because they want to corroborate that. They don't want to be seen as taking over local crime investigations. They don't have the resources to do every crime, just the ones that meet the special interests of the FBI or Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah, and so Homeland Security, of course, is not FBI. But so what makes them decide to come to a scene? And then who's in charge when you have Homeland Security and FBI, plus state, local, governor, so on?
In a terrorism investigation, it is always and very clearly the FBI. And DHS provides a supportive role, also would loan assets to the investigation. They may have also had people part of a local consortium called the Joint Terrorism Task Force, which is the FBI in lead, but members of local law enforcement as part of that. It's almost a hybrid of the FBI. So DHS loaned resources to that, provided its own expertise, might provide surveillance or things like that, but no mistake about it. The FBI is in charge, and DHS is not subordinate, but is in a supportive role to that, as is local law enforcement.
Now, we saw on television in the aftermath, there were lots of specialized equipment support, such as bomb-resistant vehicles and vehicles which spawned other vehicles which came out of them so they could get close to that SUV and so on. Is that coming from Homeland Security, or have there been enough grants over the past 10, 12 years that every local decent-sized police department has this kind of capability?
That's yes and no. I don't want to say that there's enough because there always could be more. And remember, I said local law enforcement is your first line of defense. So these weaponized or militarized vehicles, it's often they're often said that they're overused. They might be used for civil disturbances, et cetera. Now you see the case why they are needed and local law enforcement should have them. So in this case, most of that was local or county of San Bernardino. The county is same name as the town that surrounds that city. Most of those were local assets. The FBI has their own and will bring them. But usually the problem is already mitigated, or the active operational portion of this crime was already mitigated by local resources. So those were local to that southern or south, I guess it would be Eastern California region. Those come from those assets, not DHS or FBI in most cases.
We're speaking with Patrick Doyle. He's law enforcement subject matter expert at Unisys. So now we know what happens in the first response, but the after action, I mean, the voice of all this has been Director Comey from the FBI ever since the first incident in San Bernardino. What kind of vertical information sharing, analysis, lessons learning goes on after something like this, even while the investigation itself is going on?
It will be extensive. Ultimately, most efforts to understand what happened or how to do it better will be done later when the investigation is complete. But even while it's being done, remember that because it's terrorism, especially because it's terrorism, certainly in a general crime this would happen, we need to learn the tactics and practices of these two in case there are copycats, or in case there is a conspiracy and there might be another incident related to this, or they're part of a cult or a sect or some crime spree. So very quickly, we're saying what happened and where are we vulnerable for that in that immediate region or other places where these people may have touched. So a lot of intelligence is actively looked at and immediately said, can that happen now? Does that link to an investigation which we're working somewhere else where these conditions are similar to those? So actively, yes, but a review that is going to be top to bottom will occur shortly after the investigation or the operational end of the investigation is complete, and even before any other prosecutions of assistance to this.
Well, that's right. The motivations and the criminality and so forth, that could take years and years to find out what really went on and what kind of international ties they might have had. But simply in how do you stop a crazed couple with 106 pipe bombs and an arsenal and thousands of rounds, the particulars of the operation that they're looking at right now, it's safe to say?
Absolutely. And I would say, too, you mentioned something important. How did they get the materials? And how might we either prevent that or learn how they did gather those? And how did they get the firearms? Were they straw purchases where you purchase it for me and then give it to me? You make a legal purchase, but I use it for illegal means. And then you say, I had no idea that Patrick was going to use it for those purposes. Those kind of things we can learn how they took place and try to prevent them even before any prosecution or after the years of analysis will occur. But there will be deep analysis, probably on three levels. The federal government, FBI, and DHS will look at it holistically and say, what happened? How can we prevent it? Local authorities will look at it and say, how could we better respond to this operationally? Maybe not know what happened. We don't have the intelligence capability. But how can we respond and stop the shooting sooner? And in general, they'll be soul searching like you can't believe among law enforcement because they take this personally, Tom.
And I imagine something of this scale where they did have literally thousands of rounds, probably not bought from the stock of a local gun shop. The federal elements here can bring a lot of wisdom and knowledge of international trafficking and so forth that the locals may not have directly at their fingertips.
No doubt. And even where the firearms were purchased, very often they're purchased. California, not really a state which you would think of as a place where lots of firearms are produced or purchased. There are, of course, firearm stores in California. But where did they come from? So federal authorities will help network the movement of the firearm if it was purchased in a state which is more known for the use of firearms. So they'll be able to track that and who touched it along the way and how they were able to move these heavy weapons and lots of ammunition and the elements to the crime scene.
All right, so there's months to go then on the tail, just from the operation, again, without talking about the international terror ties and the motivations, but just the kinetic part of this has a long antecedent and something they're going to have to look at for quite a while.
Law enforcement will study this for years. As they do, they continue to study 9/11 and all the other terrorism-related crimes and the major mass shootings that aren't terrorism-related, workplace violence, they're studied. And even academics will look at it and say, what could we have done? How can we prevent it? So the study really hasn't begun in earnest. Operationally, yes, things are calm there. But the looking at the raw intelligence to make sure there's not a duplicative crime ready to happen. And then the long-term study will take a long period. And again, a lot of soul searching and how could we have done better?
And there's a lot more video available than there was in recent decades because of the number of surveillance cameras and the number of people with cell phones that take videos. I'm thinking back to, say, like the Kennedy assassination. The single documentary piece was this fuzzy little piece of 8mm footage. We've got gigabytes of data nowadays that law enforcement didn't even produce itself.
That's right. Now, that works in the to the advantage of the criminals in some cases, because they do use technology to their advantage. But don't think that we, the good guys on the law enforcement side, aren't using it. There's quite a trail of information that's left behind digitally, and not just the fact that citizens are more comfortable in crowdsourcing or providing. We will get there will be videos and audio recordings and tidbits of information that will continue to stream in. Most of it's supplied digitally by the greatest force multiplier, the citizenry, the public themselves.
Patrick Doyle is global law enforcement subject matter expert at Unisys. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click Share with Friends.